The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line. You're on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika, sports leader. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Hope you're all doing well on this gorgeous Tuesday afternoon. The sun is shining, not a cloud in the sky. The weather is, the temperature is perfect outside. I mean, I wouldn't change anything about it. It's sunny. You can wear a t-shirt and jeans, I mean, a polo, I guess, what we're wearing, and be comfortable, roll the windows down when you're driving, all those good things. So it is finally starting to feel like fall as the ominous hurricane is moving into Florida and probably going to get some rain here over the weekend. Mm-hmm. It seems like with hurricanes, you just don't know until like the day before, right? Seems like that's what's happening here.
Have you gotten the update from the weather app about a fire warning in the city of Auburn for until Wednesday night?
A fire warning?
Yeah, because it's
what does that even mean?
Dry and breezy is what it said.
Interesting.
I've never gotten that update in my life.
I have not gotten that update, but no, I've not seen that. A fire update. Interesting. No, I've been. Oh yeah, sure enough. If you opened up the weather app, fire weather watch in Auburn. Sure enough. Fire weather watch remains in effect from 11 a.m. Wednesday through 7 p.m. Wednesday evening for dry and breezy conditions across all of central Alabama.
I've never gotten that update in my life.
I've never even seen
Living in the state of Alabama, never seen that one before.
Interesting. Well, stay safe, I guess. I mean, it makes sense. If the weather's dry and the wind's blowing, it makes sense. But, no, I've been trying to keep up with the hurricane. It looks like we're going to get some rain. Saturday, Auburn plays LSU in Jordan-Hare Stadium Saturday night, of course. And so maybe a wet one. We'll see. Some high school football games are getting moved around to Thursday to try to avoid the rain. As far as I know, Lee Scott and Auburn High have not moved yet, so those games are still being played Friday night. Of course, Auburn High plays Opelika Friday night at home over at Auburn High. That's a huge, huge game. It's not only a rivalry, it's now a region game since Opelika moved up from 6A to 7A. A reminder, you can catch that on Wings 94.3, our sister station here at Auburn Networks. You can find that. Broadcast time, 6:30, kickoff at 7 on the Auburn High School Sports Network, Wings 94.3. You can join Scott Bagwell, Rob Pate, and Jack Cutton. Our game Friday night, Lee Scott Academy, will be at home against Autauga. It's a region game. It's homecoming. We will be on AU 100. That's 100.3. That's the home of the Lee Scott Warriors on the Lee Scott Sports Network. So you can catch that. Broadcast time at 6:30, kickoff at 7. So as far as I know, those two games are still being played Friday night. We'll see how it goes with the weather. I think the rain is supposed to get here Saturday versus Friday, but again.
I looked a couple days ago and was saying kind of Friday evening, which is not ideal.
It's not ideal.
I know some schools, I was talking to somebody yesterday, some schools have already moved their games to Thursday to try to get out ahead of it.
Well, we've seen high school games. I know Beauregard moved their games. We've seen colleges as well move some of their games. South Carolina now plays on Thursday night. Florida now plays on Sunday afternoon at noon. So lots of things are getting thrown around with this hurricane. It looks like Tampa is going to be getting the heart of it, right, I think, is what we're looking at.
At least, I'm assuming that Florida game is going to end up on, ESPN or something. And at least ESPN has Sunday programming that they never have.
Well, they normally do, NFL Live until noon, and then they have nothing to show.
And then it's like bowling.
Yeah, they literally – Sunday – ESPN's got to hate Sundays. I mean, they really, really do. But, yes, they're going to have Florida. They play – Eastern Washington, I think. They play now Sunday at noon. Like I said, let's see, South Carolina, I think they play like South Carolina State or something. They play now on Thursday to try to avoid the weather and the hurricane coming through. So we'll see how it affects things. Obviously, sports are on the back burner when it comes to a hurricane. Hopefully, it doesn't hit as hard as they think it will, but we're just going to have to wait and see. But 334-321-1390 is the number to put you through to us. Jacob Goins, Carter Bird with you here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We'd love to hear from you and what you have to say about anything going on in the world of sports. We're here for the next 2 hours. We're going to have Trey Wallace in the second hour from Outkick. He covers the SEC for them. We're going to have him in the second hour. We brought him on every Tuesday, so we really, really enjoy that. But, Carter, we got into it a little bit near the end yesterday, but kind of recapping college football from this past weekend. We can start in the SEC and then kind of work our way out from there. Some games and results that surprised you or caught your eye from over the weekend.
Well, it definitely, the first one is, for me, is how about Kent State putting up a better fight than anyone all year against Georgia, including Oregon. Bo Nix and Oregon didn't even get close to the point total that Kent State put up. Also, I mean, when you watch that game, how can you come away with anything but Brock Bowers is the best player in America?
He's so good.
Two rushes for 77 yards and a touchdown and two touchdowns, and then he added five catches for 60 yards as a tight end.
Yeah, I was about to say, he's a tight end. He's not supposed to be running the football like that.
He had a 75-yard touchdown rush in this game. But, yeah, it was interesting because you saw Georgia kind of play with its food there for a lot of that game, and it turned into it was ugly, man. I mean, it was not what you want to see going into the rest of SEC play, but I mean, I'm not worried about Georgia. I think they'll be fine. I just think that they just had that weird down week that you see some teams have. I mean, look, Florida only beat South Florida by 3, and then South Florida lost by like 48.
Yeah.
So South Florida's a bad team.
To Louisville.
And Florida kind of like just played with its food in that game as well. I just think you see that from time to time. Not used to seeing it from Georgia,
right.
But it definitely was a score that stuck out to me.
Well, I'm interested to see what Jordan Hill has to say. We'll talk to him tomorrow of Dogs 247. We talk to him every Wednesday. Interested to see what he says. I didn't watch this game. I had the score keeping up with it type of thing, but I didn't sit down and say, all right, let's watch Georgia and Kent State, because I just didn't think it was going to be this close. And 39-22, I mean, Georgia wins by double digits, but I mean, Kent State put up 22 points on a defense that looked like it has not missed a beat since last year. And Kent State also holds Georgia to 13 points in the second half, an offense that seems to be unstoppable up to this point in the season. So was this a game where Georgia just didn't prepare properly and wasn't ready to go fully and didn't take it as seriously as they should? Maybe. But are we worried about Georgia for the rest of the season? I don't think so. I think Georgia's going to be just fine. Looking at some of the other games from around the Southeastern Conference, you had Tennessee and Florida. We mentioned this one to end the show yesterday. Tennessee looks good, and they were up big on Florida. And they let the Gators come back and almost win this football game, which would have been the most Tennessee thing ever, but they didn't. They win 38-33, and is it too early to say that Tennessee's legit? I mean, is it too early to say that?
They are, but the issue is this Florida offense that had been somewhat floundering the previous couple weeks had not been as impressive as we saw in week one. You can't give up 594 yards to that team. You can't. I mean, Anthony Richardson hadn't thrown a touchdown pass, really was struggling to throw the ball in general, and he throws for 453, two touchdowns, and then has two touchdowns on the ground. Like, that's a little worrying for this Tennessee team moving forward. But yes, I do think that this Tennessee team is good, and I think it's shaping up for a very, very fun, third Saturday in October when Alabama comes to town.
Right.
I think it's the most hope Tennessee has had in years.
Years.
Since Phil Fulmer in the late 90s when they won a championship. I mean,
yeah.
they haven't looked this good In a long time.
In a long time. And I think with this year's Tennessee team, they know that the offense is their strength, and they know that the defense is going to give up some yards and give up some points. I think Tennessee's okay, and they're just going to try and outscore everybody and just have a shootout, right? I think that's what their game plan is. Get timely stops, get important stops. But the offense is probably going to have to put up close to 40 points a game to win.
And I think you're going to see some shakeups in that Florida secondary. There's some rumors about busted coverages caused by a safety who might find himself to the bench that ended up costing them dearly in that game on Saturday.
Yeah, and when you look at Tennessee's schedule, it's tough. I mean, they're on a bye this week. They're at LSU. Then they come home for Alabama. Then they have UT Martin, so not bad. Then they play home against Kentucky. So they do have three straight home games, but two of those are Bama and Kentucky, which right now are two top 10 teams in America, which may be a little questionable. But then
they go on the road.
Then they go on the road to the number one team in the country at Georgia. So if Tennessee can somehow go 2-1 in that stretch, somehow, then they are absolutely legit. I don't think they do. There's a possibility they go 0-3. I think they can beat Kentucky. I think Kentucky's good. I don't think they're the seventh best team in college football right now, but I do think they're good.
What do we think about this Florida team that's sitting here 2-2, has looked good at times, really bad at times, and they get a couple week break here, Eastern Washington, and then they get Missouri, which they will handle both those teams, I would imagine. Granted, Eastern Washington might put up a better fight than Missouri against them. But then you get that LSU at Georgia, at Texas A&M, South Carolina, 4 weeks in a row. Do we think that this team, I mean, that's a stretch there. And if they don't handle business in some fashion, if they don't split those four, we could be talking about a Florida team in year one under Billy Napier that was ranked number 12 after week one that potentially could be out of a bowl game.
Just looking at the schedule, if I had to put some wins on the board.
And don't sleep on at FSU, who's 4-0 and currently ranked 23rd right now.
Exactly. That has been a game for Florida for the past, what, 4 or 5 years? That has been you can count that as a win for them.
Oh, yeah.
Because
I mean,
of what Florida State has been.
Ever since, what, like the last year of Jimbo?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
From that point on, they've pretty much handled that rivalry, and FSU just has not been remotely good enough to compete with them.
And you can't write that down as a given W right now. You just can't do it. So Florida sitting at 2-2. Obviously, Eastern Washington, that gives them 3. I think they beat Missouri. We saw what the Tigers are on Saturday. They're not that good.
They're awful.
I like Florida in that game.
They're the second worst team in the SEC.
Yes, they are. And so then you've got 4 wins there. Then you have LSU at home. Give me the Gators just being at home, I guess. That's sort of a toss-up. If I'm just looking at it and just giving picks off the rip, right?
I think that Florida LSU game is so intriguing.
It is very intriguing. It's
so
very
intriguing to me because does this LSU team continue to pick up momentum? Obviously, they come to Auburn this weekend as 9-point favorites, which is tough that Auburn is a 9-point dog at home.
It's a lot of points.
LSU coming off back-to-back wins against LSU is just, I don't love that, but yeah, no, I think this LSU team, there's a window for them to pick up some momentum that we really didn't think they were going to have this year going into Gainesville, and I think that game could be one of the more interesting games on the SEC slate this year.
Well, the question with LSU and Florida is, which one are you going to get? Which Florida are you going to get, and which Anthony Richardson are you going to get, and which LSU are you going to get? And so, again, kind of looking at the schedule, I give Florida a win against Eastern Washington, against Missouri. I give them a win against LSU as well. So that gives them 5 on the year.
It'd be 5-2.
Lose to Georgia. A&M's going to be tough. I'm going to give them a loss there. I think A&M's starting to pick up a little bit, and it's going to be at College Station.
I will talk about in a second why I think A&M is about to fall apart, but fair.
Right, and then I think Florida can beat South Carolina. I think they can beat Vanderbilt, and then it's going to be a tough one at Florida State. I think this team is bowl eligible. Florida makes a bowl game somehow.
But
now, are they going to compete in the East? No, but they are going to make a bowl game.
There is a scenario where you drop that LSU game, you drop that Georgia game, you drop that A&M game, and all of a sudden you're staring a 5-7 season just dead in the eye, and you've got to get hot to come back and not be 5-7. You basically would have to almost win out. You would have to win all but one of those last three games of South Carolina at Vandy at Florida State.
Right, and I just don't know if Florida can beat Florida State. I think that's a great matchup too, but that's a long way away.
Yeah.
But again, just talking about some of the games and the teams from over the weekend, kind of looking ahead at college football and around the Southeastern Conference, and it's just it's a weird season.
Yeah, I mean, and you had that game in Arlington where A&M did eke out a win over Arkansas.
They did.
They had the fumble return for a touchdown,
which was unbelievable. I mean, that was so crazy.
It was a great play. But the reason why I am all the way out on Texas A&M is that offense has been a two-man offense all season long.
Mm-hmm.
It is Ania Smith and Devin Achane. Ania Smith just fractured his leg and is out for the year. So that two-man offense is now a one-man offense, and everybody's going to shut down Devin Achane. I don't think they're going to be able to score. And I think you're going to see that A&M offense fall off a cliff. And that's why I kind of like Florida down the road going to College Station. I like how a lot of these teams match up with A&M now, because I just don't know where the points are going to come from for Texas A&M.
Yeah, and I think there's something to be said, though, about A&M winning this football game against Arkansas, because Arkansas was the favorite, or actually A&M was the betting favorite, technically.
A&M was like a two-point favorite.
They were the betting favorite, technically, but Arkansas was the higher-ranked team. Arkansas has the better quarterback. I think they've got the better coach right now in the SEC with Sam Pittman over Jimbo. I just think that's a fact. But
the money would tell you differently.
The money would tell me differently, yes, but A&M came into this game with a lot of question marks, and yet they were still able to grind out a victory against Arkansas. Now, what do they do the rest of the way? They've got to go to Mississippi State this weekend. I don't know how they're going to keep up with them. I really don't.
State's winning that game.
Yeah.
State is winning that game.
I can see it because, again, like you said, A&M is struggling to score, and that's all Mississippi State can do.
And it's going
to
get worse mm-hmm. this week because they don't have one of their two true playmakers on offense.
God, they got to go three straight games on the road in the SEC at State, at Alabama, at South Carolina. That's tough.
They might come out of that 0-3.
That's tough. I think they could probably man their way to a win against South Carolina, but how many other teams in the SEC go three straight road games in conference play? I'm going to look that up during the break. We're going to see if we can find that. 334-321-1390. We'll take our first break in this first hour. We'd love to hear from you. Call in, be a part of the show, be on the line. More college football talk when we come back.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, Jacob Goins and Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Just looking around the SEC, I was looking at schedules because we are looking at Texas A&M, who has to play three straight road games in the Southeastern Conference. Arkansas has three straight road games, but it is, I just had it pulled up and I lost it. They played three straight.
The second one.
Yeah, the second one. It's broken up by a trip to BYU, which is tough in its own right.
It's weird.
It's so weird in the middle of the schedule. So they play, here it is. So they have, Arkansas has Alabama this weekend at home, which is a huge game. Then they play at Mississippi State, at BYU, and at Auburn. So that's a top three-game road stretch you got to go to. It's not three straight SEC games like A&M has to do, but three straight road games in the middle of the season, tough.
They've got a decent shot at going 1-3 in that four-game stretch.
Yeah.
A decent shot.
Decent shot.
Because they are underdogs against Alabama. On the road, I don't care. And State catches everybody in just the worst spots possible. But on the road at Mississippi State is a way harder game than everybody's going to give it credit for. State can win that game, and then you're kind of limping across the country to go play BYU in Provo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can see that going bad too.
And then for what it's worth, you got to come to Auburn. Who knows what the situation is going to be in that? But Auburn has Arkansas's number every year. I mean, Auburn finds a way to get up and decide to put it on Arkansas when they have to. So you just never know what the situation is going to be during that game. But
But like
even before then,
putting it on Arkansas, what is that, winning like 10-7?
I mean, win's a win, man. Win's a win.
Apparently we learned that on Saturday.
We learned that on Saturday, and sometimes it doesn't even feel like a win, right?
Yeah.
And I was so when I was looking through some of the other schedules, I pulled up Ole Miss, and the rest of their schedule is abysmal. It is awful. They play in like hardness wise, like it's not easy. There is nothing easy about the rest of this Ole Miss schedule. They are 4-0. But they have not played anybody. They played all four of their out-of-conference games to start the season.
To an extent, credit to them. They went and brought a ton of transfers that was going to take time for them to gel. And they took their time and scheduled Troy, Central Arkansas, at Georgia Tech, and Tulsa. Four bad teams. Granted, they weirdly struggled with Tulsa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't like all four of them being at the beginning. You don't get any break in conference play. Now you've got to go through a gauntlet of the SEC with no break at all.
Vanderbilt.
Well, it's on the road, though. You never know.
Yeah.
So now they have to play at home against Kentucky this weekend, 11 a.m. on ESPN. Then they go to Vanderbilt. Then they have Auburn at home, at LSU, at Texas A&M, home for Alabama, at Arkansas, home for Mississippi State. Ole Miss is going through the ringer in their SEC schedule. I mean, I don't know.
And their coach is having to shame the fans to show up on Saturday at 11 a.m. You want to talk about a team that just got, like, the short end of the stick when it comes to scheduling? There's no reason on this planet that Kentucky at number 7, Kentucky at number 14, Ole Miss, is at 11 a.m.
Yeah.
And LSU coming to Auburn is at 6.
I agree.
That is some of the worst scheduling I've ever seen by ESPN.
Well, we also saw yesterday that the news came out that Auburn, Georgia, next week is on CBS at 2:30.
I hate that one too, but at least you can explain it away a little bit because the that's the double up weekend for CBS, and they've got A&M Alabama in primetime.
Yeah, but the big SEC game next week is not Auburn Georgia. I mean, let's just be honest,
it's not the second best one. But their CBS is saying by putting Alabama and Georgia, or Alabama and A&M at that 6:30, whatever time slot it is, that's their first pick. That's the number one game in the SEC because they get that one, and then Auburn will get the Aaron Murray crew, which
2:30
is already every Auburn fan's favorite,
right,
at 2:30. Yeah, that'll be tough to watch for sure.
Yeah, and the SEC was pushing for the other big game that is – in the SEC, and Auburn ended up getting the 2:30 slot. I guess CBS just wanted number one and number two, Georgia, Alabama. I mean, the big names, obviously. And a lot of times, the Auburn-Georgia game is on CBS because most of the time, they're two really, really good teams playing against each other. It's normally a good matchup, but I just don't know if that's going to be the case next week. We know that it's going to be Georgia as a heavy, heavy favorite. But again, CBS had the chance to pick up the dog, so I guess they did it.
LSU and Tennessee should be one of these two CBS games.
And that's what that's what the SEC pushed for, and they didn't get it.
And then what are the other ones going on? That next week, that week six, I'm trying to think. I'm looking at
SEC schedule-wise?
Arkansas and Mississippi State should be on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I mean, that's probably it.
The two games, because we can say Alabama and A&M is this big game going into it, but A&M's offense is hemorrhaging players, and it's already bad. Alabama's going to beat them by 35.
Yeah, A&M will be lucky to put up double digits in that game. We'll just be honest. I mean, just
Max Johnson will be lucky to get out of the game healthy.
Yeah, maybe Will Anderson's
that offensive line is that bad.
Maybe Will Anderson's Heisman hype will come back after the A&M game because that has dropped like a rock. Have you noticed that? I mean, nobody is talking about Will Anderson as a Heisman favorite
it's
anymore.
Brock Bowers.
Yeah, replace Will Anderson with Brock Bowers, the tight end from Georgia. There's no shot he wins, right? No shot.
Oh, Bowers?
Yeah, no shot.
He should. He's not going to get an invite to New York, but he should.
That'd be so funny.
He is quite literally the best player in America.
It's awesome. I mean, look, you hate to see Georgia doing so well. I know Auburn fans hate to see that, but Bowers, a tight end being as good as he is kind of cool. And Auburn should be jealous. and envy it. Like, Auburn dreams of having a tight end that can do something like that, because Auburn doesn't use their tight ends like they should. They never have, and I don't know if they ever will. Not saying the tight ends at Auburn right now aren't good like that, but they just don't get used like that. I mean, if Auburn used them, a tight end, like they're supposed to, I think Auburn could be, and that's what we thought was going to happen this year. And you know what? It's not really happening.
So, Kyle Pitts in 2020 finished 10th in the Heisman race. The last time a tight end had finished in the top 10 was 1977 when Notre Dame's Ken McAfee finished third.
Holy smokes.
I don't think a Heisman's ever won it. Oh, actually, the last time a tight end won the Heisman Trophy was in 1949 when Notre Dame's Leon Hart won it.
What other positions did he play? I guarantee he wasn't just a tight end.
Well, that was back in the day where, like, tight end literally was, like, receiver.
Yeah.
Probably lined up in the backfield some. And then, like, I was an actual tight end. And probably he put up 600 yards of offense and won the Heisman.
Yeah. And he was probably
on an undefeated Notre Dame team. And that's probably how
and he was 100% a defensive back of some sort, too. I mean, I guarantee he played both sides of the football. I mean, there's no doubt. But just recapping what we saw over the weekend, SEC football, some weird scores, some weird results. We've got some good games coming up. We've seen some adjustments already. South Carolina playing on Thursday. Florida now playing on Sunday with the hurricane coming in. Hopefully it doesn't affect too many things, and we'll just kind of see how it goes. 30 minutes into hour number one, some Auburn football talk when we come back.
You are on the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. 334-321-1390 is the number to put you through to us. We'd love to hear from you and whatever you have to say about college football. What was the result that shocked you over the weekend? Which team are you high on? Which team are you low on from the SEC? As we're a couple of days out from Auburn beating Missouri, and we're still a few days away from Auburn taking on LSU, how do you feel right now about Auburn? How do you feel about the program? Are you feeling any better about Auburn versus LSU coming up this weekend? We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Carter, I'm going to ask you that question. Now that we're a couple days out and removed from Auburn winning against Missouri, are you feeling any better about it?
No. I actually came across a stat last night that is...
Oh, yeah, you told me this.
The actual grossest stat I've ever come across.
Let them hear it.
In my entire time following Auburn football. So, how many times do you think Auburn ran the ball from the second quarter on?
On Saturday? Oh, goodness.
They ran it a fair amount.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, what?
28 times.
I was going to say 20, maybe.
How many yards do you think they had on 28 carries?
28 carries, I mean, maybe 40 yards?
11.
Oh, my gosh. 11?
They were averaging 0.39 yards per carry over the last three quarters and overtime.
Oh, my gosh. That's so bad.
Against a bad Missouri front. Missouri front that's not physical, that got pushed around by Kansas State. I would be worried.
So then, in your opinion, why did that happen? What happened to Auburn's run game then? Why were they only averaging, from what you saw? And because, I mean, we all watched it, but from what you saw,
can't run block. Yeah. And Missouri figured out, oh, they literally don't trust Robbie Ashford to throw the ball. So, okay, let's just stack the box and say, beat us with your arm. And Auburn really didn't beat them with Robbie Ashford's arm, considering the fact that they didn't score any points in regulation after the first two drives.
And you know what's crazy to me is after those first two drives where Auburn goes up 14-0, you saw in those drives, remember what I talked about late last week when we were talking about how Auburn has to beat Missouri and how to win in general? Get guys like Tank Bigsby out in space, give him some room to actually run. And we saw Auburn do that a little bit, throwing it to guys quickly and letting them use their legs to beat people. We saw Auburn do that, and then they didn't. And I don't know why they went away from that. I don't know why or what changed from that, because it was working. And we know that Auburn's offensive line right now is not good enough to compete in the SEC man-to-man, just line up and hit somebody. They're just not to that point right now. And so we talked about this last week. Auburn has to adjust with who they have and what they have on offense and on defense. When it comes to your players and the talent level that's on your football team, you have to adjust to what you have. Auburn does not do that. They're not doing that because we saw Auburn's offensive line get pushed around, get knocked back, and not create any holes for anybody after those first two drives. And so, again, here we are. We sit here and we watch Auburn go and struggle against defensive lines in Missouri that are not that good. There's some talent, but they're not like what Auburn's going to see on Saturday against LSU, what they're going to see next week against Georgia, what they're going to see in the entire SEC West. So what does Auburn have to do in your mind or in the listener's mind, 334-321-1390, what does Auburn have to do to fix it? How are they going to score the football? That's my big question, because right now, I don't know.
I don't know how they're going to score on Saturday, because if you struggled as much as you did on Saturday with Missouri, that's the worst defense you're going to see until Western Kentucky, I guess.
Probably, yeah.
And I mean, I really don't know if that's that true, but you're going to see a better defense on Saturday. You're going to see the best defense the week after that. Heck, Ole Miss's defense is still solid. I mean, if you can't score on Saturday against Missouri, we know Robbie Ashford is starting on Saturday. I don't see how Auburn gets to 10 points. And I don't see how the defense facing a much more athletic team that's starting to figure it out, I don't see how the defense holds them below 17 or 20.
Do you think that after one game of Robbie Ashford as the true starter from start to finish, I know he got a little banged up and Gariner came in and had a couple of snaps, but do you think that now after one game of Robbie Ashford as the starter that he is more comfortable and that he will maybe be a little bit comfortable in the game? I mean, is that a possibility now that he has had that game under his belt?
I guess. I don't know. I don't think it's a comfortability issue. I think it's right now he's just doesn't have the skill set and the offense isn't being tailored enough to his skill set. He doesn't have this, I'm going to sit back there in the pocket and throw the ball. And so I think there needs to be more read options, more trying to get him on the edge, roll him out, move him away from the pressure, give him easy reads. I just don't feel like I don't think this offense is trending in a direction where I can feel any bit of confidence. I'm sure he may feel, he's like, okay, there may be less nerves going into Saturday because it's not his first career start anymore. It's his second start. But then, I mean, it is LSU. It's a rivalry game. So maybe the nerves are back up a little bit because of that. But I just don't see, I don't think the offensive coaching staff is good enough. I don't think I'll rephrase that. I don't think Brian Harsin and Eric Kiesel are good enough at game planning and tailoring this offense to Robbie Ashford's skill set on Saturday that this offense is going to have success.
And I think too, what we saw is something that we have sort of seen a trend with Brian Harsin as the head coach is there's not a whole lot of adjustments in the game. I mean, I don't think that is happening a whole lot, especially between the first half and the second half. I don't think we're seeing that a whole lot. And you know what that reminds me of?
In fact, no. You aren't seeing any adjustments at all.
That's what I'm saying.
Which is why Brian Harsin is proving himself to be the worst coach in the conference right now. Because you can't get outscored in big games 98-18 in the second half. It like your last, what, 5-6 big games? You're getting killed in the second half. You aren't showing fight in the second half. It's awful to watch.
And you know what this reminds me of? this is what Gus did. Gus never made adjustments in the second half because he would do some stuff and it would work in the first half, and he'd say, good job, boys, let's do it again, and the other team would adjust to it, and then he would be putting his hands up like, well, what the heck happened? Why didn't it work in the first half? Why didn't it work in the second half? Well, guess what? The other team goes to halftime, and their coach is cussing them out and calling them all names and telling them, hey, we got to fix this so they don't keep doing it. And then guess what? They fix it. But Auburn has not been doing that. They didn't do it with Gus, and they haven't been doing it with Brian Harsin on either side of the football. And that's what makes me so frustrated is you go in the locker room for 30 minutes. What in the world are you doing in there, right? I mean, what are you doing besides sitting there drinking water and talking with your buddies? Like, are we not making any adjustments at halftime? Are we not talking about a game plan that is different from the first half? I get it. If it worked in the first half, you want to try it in the second half to see if that other team adjusted or not. But as soon as they do, and as soon as you realize, okay, they adjusted, you've got to have a plan. And it just doesn't seem like Auburn and Brian Harsin are doing that in the game right now.
Over the last 48 minutes of the game on Saturday, Auburn had 134 yards of offense. 134 yards against a bad defense. A legitimately bad defense. And they're going to get exposed by everybody else they play in the SEC this year.
Can they fix it? I mean, what do they need to do to fix it? In your mind.
Well, I don't think they can fix it. I don't think, because the offensive line is not going to get better. I mean, you're losing guys off the offensive line, left and right
now. And that's not helping Auburn at all.
You're on your third center. You're probably going to have to shuffle Brandon Council to center and shuffle around the guards where it's Cam Stutz and Keandre Jones and Alec Jackson, all those guys are out there in some fashion.
I think that's an important fact to keep in mind here is that while the offensive line is not performing to its standard, they did lose one of the guys off the line, and now you're losing the backup. I mean, you're losing the center who runs the entire operation. I mean, you did lose Nick Broms, and that did not help at all to start out, right? So you've got to keep that in mind too, but you would expect the other guys, to, as long as they've been here, to be able to perform to what we thought they were going to be. The expectations for Auburn and the offense and the offensive line, it was never to be the best in the SEC. We didn't think that was going to be the case, but we just wanted some improvement.
So somebody looked at raw talent in the SEC. I think Auburn is sixth in talent on the roster, and eighth in talent on the offensive line. This offensive line is not playing like a middle-of-the-pack offensive line right now.
And that's the thing. They're not playing like
it. In fact, they're probably playing like a bottom two, maybe the worst offensive line in the conference.
They're just not performing to what we thought they were going to be coming into.
I think that's a development issue.
Yeah, I agree. I think it is a development issue because they haven't gotten any better. And that's the issue, too, is we've seen that with Auburn as well. We've seen that as a trend at Auburn for a while now, where if you come here, if you're not just fantastic when you come here, there's a lot of guys that have come through Auburn the last 4 or 5 years. They left the exact same player they were when they showed up.
I just want to pose this question because a lot of people praise him as a recruiter and a coach. When you have the eighth most talented offensive line, why are they playing like a bottom two offensive line in the conference? And then if Wilfred is the recruiter that they talk about him being, how come no players were landed in the transfer portal? How come you only signed one offensive lineman when you knew that was the issue when you took the job in January of 2021? You got to go get bodies. You got to go get better. And they didn't.
Yep.
And they just banked on the guys coming back who had not been up to standard improving. And they haven't. They've gotten worse. They've regressed. That is the thing. That's the type of stuff that I don't get. I don't understand it.
And throughout the summer, there was a lot of callers here on the show that would call in and say, you know, a lot of our regulars and even new people as well, they would call in and say, yeah, well, let's say the offensive line does take a step forward this year and they are halfway decent. Well, what about next year? That was always the question about the offensive line was, well, what about next year when those guys are gone? And that is still a big question. We're still trying to get through this season, but what about next year? Because like you just mentioned, Auburn doesn't have anybody.
Auburn has to, whoever the coach is,
in November, in December, that coach is going to have to hit the transfer portal for offensive linemen like we've never seen a coach hit for one position group ever. Because if he doesn't, Holden Gurner, Robbie Ashford, whoever's still even on the roster at quarterback, it will be legitimately almost unsafe for them to play.
And this is where it comes back to the conversation and discussion that you and I had yesterday is when you go into the transfer portal and you go to these kids' houses, as an offensive line and an offensive lineman, how do you get them to come to Auburn? How do you make them choose Auburn over Alabama, over Georgia, schools that are pumping guys into the pros? I mean, pumping them into the pros at that position.
Well, I mean, you go look at – so what I do is I pull up the recruiting classes of the last few years, and I cite where Georgia has signed like 12 offensive linemen that are all 4- and 5-stars.
You're saying
and
playing
Alabama's
time.
Alabama's caught – signed 13 offensive linemen, 4- and 5-stars, and Auburn signed 2, and they haven't added anybody in the transfer portal, and all these veterans are leaving, say, hey, I can guarantee you a starting spot where at these other schools you might be second, third string if you don't go there and perform. I can guarantee you a starting spot because we don't have any bodies.
And that's pretty much where Auburn was at, and Auburn is still at. But again, even, you know, playing time is great. I mean, that's obviously what everybody's trying to do. Well,
it'll be, in my opinion, a different staff selling that. Which, if we're sitting here talking about Brian Harsin and Will Friend trying to sell it, then it's like, why have y'all let it get to this bad of a situation? And y'all are coming off a year where the offensive line was awful and nobody's developed. Well, I don't think it's going to be that group. I think it's going to be a new staff. And if you can get a coaching staff that can recruit and an offensive line coach that can recruit and develop and has a track record for developing players.
That's it right there.
You can sell the playing time, and that works.
That's it right there. Playing time is huge, but you've got to be able to develop them when they are playing. And that's why you see schools like Alabama, Georgia, other schools. That's why they get so many, and that's why guys are willing to go there and wait for their turn because they know they're going to get better while they're working and while they're waiting for their turn. And then when they hit the field, they're going to be great. That's what they can offer.
That's why I would legitimately, I'd be A-OK, I'd be happy if Jeff Grimes is the next Auburn coach. Because he has a track record for recruiting and developing guys. He is going to build the Auburn roster from the trenches out. So I would be very happy with that. But I do think that the number one thing, whoever takes the job, they got to go get 5-6 guys from the transfer portal for the offensive line.
And that's so tough. That's so tough. If Brian Harsin is to lose his job, that is so tough to ask of somebody just stepping into the position. Look, it's easy to sit here and talk about all the negatives because of a lot of them are present and just things that need to be fixed. But Auburn is 3-1. Auburn's 1-0 in the SEC. They've got LSU at home this weekend. If they go 4-1 before going to Georgia, we'll see. It depends on how Auburn looks this weekend against LSU. We've got a lot more to talk about that today and this week here on the show. 334-321-1390 is the number to put you through to us. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. We're going to take our final break in this first hour. Come back, talk about the Braves as they are closing in on the New York Mets. All that and more here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, Jacob Goins, Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. We're talking about the Braves, and they handled business last night, that's for sure. They were not, they were one of four games of baseball last night. It's kind of weird there was only four games, but
I guess they were inspired from their trip to the White House earlier
today. Yeah, I guess so. I saw that. Yeah, they made a trip to the old White House to get honored for winning the World Series last year.
There was a little bit of history in that game last night, by the way. Bryce Elder became the first Braves rookie to throw a complete game shutout since 1990.
I saw that.
He is the first Braves pitcher to throw a complete game shutout this season.
This season, that is correct.
I think he's the first Braves pitcher to throw a complete game this year.
Could be.
I want to say that maybe Fried has one. I don't know.
But yeah, you're right. He pitched It was 8-0 Braves over the Nationals. Both teams had 6 hits. The Nationals had 1 error. But Braves win 8-0 in a night where, again, there were a few games on. The Yankees lose, Pirates beat the Reds, and the Orioles beat the Red Sox, who are now out of the playoffs. The Red Sox are. Oh, man. Don't get me started on the Red Sox. But Braves beat the Nationals. The Mets didn't play. So you know what that means. The Braves moved up in the standings. They close in on the Mets. They are now 1 game back of the New York Mets. And, again, it's coming down to it. I'm just going to let you know. It's coming down to the series this weekend in Atlanta as the Braves take on the Mets. But Braves have another game against the Nationals tonight. The Mets play the Marlins. They start a 2-game series with the Marlins in New York. And so then, again, the Braves have the Nationals, and then they play the Mets at home this weekend. And that series is going to determine who wins the National League East. And just a little heads up, you can catch all 3 games right here on ESPN 106.7 Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. As of right now, all 3 games are being played as scheduled. We'll see how the hurricane affects things in Atlanta. I'm not sure what their radar's looking like. Not sure when they're going to catch rain. I hope that it doesn't get pushed back to like a doubleheader on Sunday. I hope not, because I don't want them to be playing for the division in a 7-inning doubleheader on Sunday afternoon. I mean, I just don't want that to happen. But we'll see how it goes. But again, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right here on ESPN 106.7, you can catch all 3 games at Braves, Mets on ESPN National Radio. That's part of a huge weekend we have here on ESPN 106.7, and just sports in general here from Auburn Networks. We have 2 high school football games on Friday night. We have Lee Scott hosting Autauga on AU100. That's 100.3 on the Lee Scott Sports Network. You have Auburn High hosting Opelika in a huge rivalry game this weekend. That'll be on Wings 94.3 on the Auburn High School Sports Network on Friday night. Then on Saturday, and also Braves play Friday night on ESPN. Then on Saturday, the Braves play on ESPN. Then we have Alabama-Arkansas as a live event on Saturday afternoon. Alabama-Arkansas on ESPN Radio. That'll be here on ESPN 106.7. Then after the game with Jack and Carter, they'll be talking after the game in Auburn football late on Saturday night. Auburn and LSU. You guys will be going on the air about 9:30, 10 o'clock, my friend.
Yeah, it'll be late. It'll be late for sure.
It'll be late. Then on Sunday, we have an NFL game in the wrap-up series, or the game of the series of the Braves and the Mets. Huge weekend here on ESPN 106.7. Hour number 1 officially in the books. Stay tuned. A whole lot more coming up in hour number 2.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika, sports leader. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Hope you're all doing well on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon here in the Auburn Opelika area. Hour number 1 officially in the books. You know what that means. Hour number 2 officially underway here on ESPN 106.7. If you missed any of the first hour, be sure to find the podcast. Just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast, or you can go to ESPNAU.com, click on the podcast center, and you can find it all right there. So lots of college football and Auburn football talk in the first hour. Carter, I didn't let you get to your baseball stats to end the first hour, so I wanted to let you get a chance to talk about your baseball stats, because we were talking about the Braves, and then I got going on about all the live events we have going on this weekend. So I didn't give you a chance to get your stats in, because you always have crazy stats. I don't know where you find them, but you always have some good ones.
Well, I just think that when you look at that Braves performance last night with the way that Bryce Elder pitched, it's what impresses me is the fact that it's 4 straight quality starts.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone 27 2/3 of 2-run baseball,
And as you are getting to the postseason, he's not even really a rotation guy, really. And especially when you get in the postseason, just to have that arm pitching at that level, that is huge to me. And then my other stat is very subtly, it feels like Marcell Ozuna's bat is starting to wake up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a couple home runs here in the month of September. Only has 39 at-bats, but he's got 13 hits in that span, 7 RBIs. I mean, just to have somebody that in a spot can pinch hit in a spot where you need somebody just to get a hit in a certain spot in the postseason,
right.
I think that's valuable. If the Braves can get healthy, I like the way the team is starting to come together. I think they can be, even if they don't win the NL East, I think they can be very much a threat here in the postseason yet again as defending world champs.
Right, and they've already clinched, so they are in the postseason. They're just trying to win the division, yes. And it comes down to the series this weekend in Atlanta as the Mets come to town. It's just going to be so hard to beat the Dodgers, man. The Dodgers are playing so good, and they're so stupidly talented that I just don't know how you're going to beat them. They're outscoring people at a record rate. They're on pace, I think. I don't know if they're going to break it, but they're on pace to have the biggest margin of victory or like more runs than their opponent in history. I mean, it's crazy what the Dodgers are doing right now. And again, they have so much talent, they should be doing that. I mean, they're just that good. I mean, they have so many players, but Oh, excuse me. God, I got choked up. My bad. But again, the Braves and the Mets this weekend here on ESPN 106.7. You can catch that Friday, Saturday, Sunday on ESPN Radio right here on ESPN 106.7. But, Carter, wanted to get into the announcement from the SEC today about the basketball schedule a little bit. The SEC Big 12 Challenge times and TV channels have been released. Of course, in basketball, in the end of January, the SEC and the Big 12, they've been doing it for years, where they take a break from conference play and they go and play the other conference. And it is really, really fun when the SEC and Big 12 get together and play in the middle of the season, because you're about a month into conference play. It's a good little break on the weekend on a Saturday to play a really fun opponent. We've seen Auburn play Oklahoma and Baylor the last couple of years, which were both good games and good matchups, rather. And so looking at it this year, you have Alabama playing Oklahoma, Arkansas and Baylor, two of the best programs in college basketball right now, are squared, set to square off.
Because I think Arkansas is going to be the best team in the SEC this year, and I think it's going to be...
Really?
Yeah.
You think they're going to be able to put it together this year?
I just think there's a lot of talent.
There's a lot of talent over there. And Musselman's a very, very good coach. Reminder that Auburn plays West Virginia at West Virginia. And this is all on January 28th. This is the SEC Big 12 Challenge for basketball.
I personally love that Auburn gets to kind of kick it off. In Morgantown, 11 a.m. on either ESPN or ESPN2. I'm curious when they make that call. Is it like the week before?
Probably.
But
yeah.
Yeah. It'll be
there. And you know, a lot of these games, like they've given the times. They just have a lot of games have an option of what channel on ESPN it's going to be on, just because they want to see which teams are good, which teams are not, which ones they want to highlight on the main channels and all that.
I want to see, rather than Missouri play, I'd rather see Texas A&M play Iowa State. I think that would be a more fun matchup. In my mind, I don't think Missouri basketball is that good.
No. Well, who are the teams that are not this year?
Actually, make Texas Tech go to Texas A&M. Get that Texas thing going.
That'd be fun.
LSU's going to be awful this year.
Yeah, they are. LSU's going to be bad for a while.
Texas Tech's going to go there and win by 30.
Well, I think it's at Texas Tech.
It's at LSU. What I'm looking at right here on the Big 12 website.
Okay.
But, I mean, that game's not going to be pretty. I mean, I like some of these matchups. I like Texas at Tennessee. I think that one's going to be a lot of fun. Florida having to go up to K-State could be interesting. Obviously, Kansas and Kentucky, two of the three biggest brands in basketball right now.
Mm-hmm.
I like a lot of these matchups. I think it could be a very, very fun Saturday when all these games are played. I'm looking forward to it. I think the SEC is going to be another year where the SEC is sneaky good. They are underrated going into the year. I know Bruce and Charles Barkley went up to Birmingham to speak to the Monday Morning Quarterback Club up there, mm-hmm. or something. And I think Bruce was basically saying, I think he was pretty, he was downplaying expectations the way that Bruce kind of does preseason. He said that, yeah, I mean, we're the fifth best team in the conference. And then he kind of laid it out. He's like, it'll be Kentucky and Arkansas, then Tennessee, then Alabama, then us. And he's like, and Alabama and us are going to be interchangeable potentially at that four or five spot. But yeah, no, I think the SEC has a chance to be good. It has to be a chance to be pretty deep, I think. And I'm looking forward to basketball season, man.
Well, they've already started practice. They started yesterday, and we've
new,
got some
practice jerseys that apparently are very hot topics right now, depending on which side of the fence you're on.
Have you seen them?
I have.
I like them. It's got Auburn written across it, and I don't really know how to describe it, but they're different, and I kind of like it though.
It's a different Auburn font than what you see on the game jerseys as well. It almost has like a throwbackish feel to it.
Yeah, it does. It really does. It looks like, you know what it looks like? It looks like those sweatshirts that you put on, the old sweatshirts like of sports teams that has that big bold lettering that's got a little fade back behind it of a color. Like, that's sort of what the lettering and writing sort of looked like from my eyes. So, Auburn basketball starts practice, so that's exciting. But it is football season, and Auburn football is, we all kind of know where it's at right now, but we'd love to hear
it's
from
not
you.
It's trending in a great direction.
No, it's not. 334-321-1390. Hey, reminder, in this hour, we're going to talk to Trey Wallace, who covers the SEC for OutKick, and get his thoughts and opinions on Auburn beating Missouri, and get his thoughts on Auburn as the program right now, where they're going, his thoughts on the future of Brian Harsin, get his thoughts on SEC, Auburn, LSU, all the good stuff going on in college football around the SEC right now. So we'll talk to him at 3:30. But, Carter, I asked you the question in the first hour. I want to ask you again for our new listeners. Now that we're a couple of days removed from Auburn beating Missouri, how are we feeling? I mean, how do you feel right now with the state of Auburn football, the program, right now, as they're 3-1, 1-0 in the conference, they get ready for LSU, their fifth straight home game, stripe the stadium, Saturday night in Jordan-Hare. It gets a little weird sometimes, but how are you feeling right now with the current state of Auburn football?
I'm not great at all. I mean, I don't see this going well Saturday. I don't see it going well really at any point the rest of the season. I just think that if you don't win on this Saturday, that game in Athens, the 2:30 CBS game, might be a very demoralizing moment for this Auburn roster. And I think it could get really ugly. I think Kirby will have no issue making it ugly, just because I think that there is, his history as a player and as a coach with Auburn would point to, I think if he has a chance to put it on Auburn, he will.
He probably doesn't have a heart for Auburn, let's just be honest.
Well, I think you kind of got a little bit of evidence of that after 2017 when Gus Malzahn dropped the "we beat the dog crap out of him" after the game. And then he's had that in his brain, just extra fuel to the fire, and He's gonna use that opportunity against this Auburn team that's trending the wrong direction next week. Not this weekend, but next weekend. I don't see a good path to really winning more than one more game against Western Kentucky, because you're a worse team than everybody else on the roster.
Let me ask you this.
Or on the schedule.
And I want to hear from our listeners too. 334-321-1390. It's Tuesday, and we're starting to talk about Auburn versus LSU on Saturday. And coming off of the win against Missouri, obviously the feelings are not good, right? It wasn't pretty. It was ugly. Auburn should have lost twice, but they do win. And so here's my question. Is the game on Saturday against LSU that we're preparing for, there's not a good feeling going into it.
No,
Auburn's
not
a huge underdog, 9 points. It'll probably continue to grow as the week goes on.
They opened as a six-point dog.
It's moved 3 points.
A day and a half, it jumped to 9.
Yep.
Within 2 hours, it jumped to 7.5.
Which means bettors are throwing money on LSU.
Yes.
But here's the question. Are fans worried about LSU beating Auburn, or are fans worried about Auburn not being able to beat LSU? Does that make sense?
Are fans worried about LSU beating Auburn or Auburn not beating LSU?
Yeah, like, are you worried about LSU? Like, oh man, LSU just they're both. Just a really good football team. Or are you worried about Auburn because of what we've seen so far?
I think it's a contrast of two things. LSU starting to find an identity as a team, and they're starting to rally together in that locker room behind their new coach. I think the week one game against FSU is an example of a locker room that maybe hadn't been out there and hadn't fought together, and really they haven't been a competitive team in a couple of years. And I think there was frustration. I think they have figured out a way to get past that, and they've gotten better. There's no denying that this LSU team has gotten better. On the flip side, I think this Auburn team didn't really have an identity early and has only further they've only gotten farther away from finding an identity as an offense, as a team. I'm curious to know what the vibes are really like in that locker room because you've not looked good through four games. You're somehow 4-1 or 3-1. You had the embarrassing loss to Penn State. You somehow won on Saturday. You messed around with a couple bad teams to open the year. I don't know where this Auburn team is at mentally, and I'm curious.
I think, in my opinion, when I think of Auburn playing LSU this weekend, the thoughts that come to my head are not, wow, LSU is just a really, really good football team. Now, thinking about Auburn playing Georgia next week, that's what I think of is like, Georgia is a really, really good football team, and they are going to give Auburn troubles. I don't know what LSU is yet. I don't. They do have an SEC win. They beat Mississippi State.
They had an impressive win over State.
31-16.
A state team that I still think is good.
LSU, you look at them, like you said, they lose to Florida State on opening night in a crazy game.
And they made plenty of mistakes to put themselves in that spot. Muffed two punts, did about everything wrong that they could just to lose that game.
They win against Southern, then they beat Mississippi State, then they beat New Mexico last week 38-0 on Saturday. Now they have at Auburn their first road game of the season, and it's Saturday night in Jordan-Hare Stadium. Now we know that Auburn is not playing to the level that we've seen Auburn play in the past, where Jordan-Hare becomes the toughest place to play in college football, but this is their first road game of the season for LSU, and I think that will carry over something.
Probably.
But again, this matchup for me, it's more of me worrying about Auburn rather than worrying about LSU. Because again, when I think of this, I'm not like, wow, LSU, they've just got a lot of playmakers. They got a great, whatever it may be. I don't think that. I'm worried about Auburn doing what they need to do and make the right plays to beat LSU. That's what I worry about.
Yeah, I mean, I if I'm where I think that we're going to learn a lot is that first offensive possession for Auburn. What does LSU do? Because personally, I think they can make it really, really simple and say, hey, we're going to put a bunch of bodies in the box. We know you want to run. You couldn't really run against Missouri. You're not going to run on us.
Right.
Can you make plays in the passing game? We will single up on the perimeter. And can you win one-on-ones with your receivers? Can your quarterback make throws? Can Robbie Ashford make plays with his arm?
Because he is getting the start. We learned that. He is starting.
He is listed as the starter. I know Harsin said Finley was practicing, but he also said everybody was competing the week before, and that wasn't the case. So
I knew you were going to say that.
I'll take that with a grain of salt there. But I have a similar feeling as I did going into this last week. I don't know how Auburn scores. And I don't think this Auburn defense is good enough to hold up under immense pressure for four quarters against that LSU team. The dam's going to break. It's going to crack a few times. It's going to crack maybe on a couple big plays, and then at some point it's going to break. And they're going to score two or three late touchdowns, because that defense is having to be on the field and having to hold the line so much. And I don't know where the points come from for Auburn.
And the defense has been playing solid for Auburn.
Yeah, they played pretty well on Saturday.
Yeah.
I don't have any complaints about that defense. But even then, late, cracks were forming in the dam.
They gave up. I mean, let's just be honest.
Big pass play.
They gave up a touchdown.
And then Missouri. Well, in regulation, the big pass play, which was a great ball, great catch. And then Missouri got passive and played for the field goal. They missed the field goal, and then two plays into overtime. I mean, that's a legitimate touchdown.
It is.
It just gets dropped. Yeah. But I think they were starting to get tired because there's just kind of like that 2019 team, which that 2019 defense is a lot better than this defense. Let's get that out of the way. I will die on the hill that the 2019 Auburn defense is one of the best defenses in Auburn history. It just doesn't get the shine or the respect that it deserves because the 2019 offense was bad and put them in a bunch of awful, awful spots. And they were on the field all freaking game. But this defense is going to have to put up performances somewhat reminiscent of 2019. They aren't to that skill level just to win games, to stay in games.
Well, I think the defense has got to – they've got to continue to force turnovers. They finally started to do that on Saturday. They got – technically two. They forced one, and the other one, like we said, was a giveaway.
But not a takeaway.
But the defense has got to do that, and they got to start getting turnovers to help out their offense and get good field position. That way the offense doesn't have to go 70, 80 yards every time, and the defense can get off the field like you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I think the D-line against a bad Missouri team showed up and played. They got pressure on the quarterback. You saw Derek Hall, Eku Leota. You saw guys make an impact. But I worry as this season progresses, I don't think the linebackers are playing well. I don't think the linebackers are playing well. DBs are playing better than they did early. Still have some questions, but I worry about the second level of that Auburn defense because I just don't feel like they're playing up to standard.
334-321-1390. I'm going to keep talking about the defense when we come back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Continuing to talk about the Auburn defense because it has been a lot of condescending talk about the offense, and you understand why, just because of the struggles we've seen on the offensive side of the football. But Jacob Goetz, Carter Bird with you here on the Line. We got a few more minutes before we get to Trey Wallace, who covers the SEC for Outkick. But Carter, we were talking about the defense because through four games, besides the Penn State game where they held their own nonetheless, the offense didn't help them out any, but through three games, or four games, I should say, they haven't given up more than, well, I was looking at besides the Penn State game. They give up 16, 16, and then 14. So outside of the Penn State game, they're playing well. And even in the Penn State game, they did play well until they finally just couldn't hold on anymore.
I mean, my counter to that is they've played three, and besides the Penn State game, because that's the crux of this argument, they've played three abysmal offenses. They played FCS Mercer, okay. San Jose State, who can't move the ball in their games this year. And then Missouri, who legitimately is a bad offense. Brady Cook is a bad quarterback. They've got some talent at receiver, but they can't get the ball to him. That's why you see Luther Burden scrubbing his social media of Missouri. Because he regrets that decision to pick Missouri, hometown Missouri, over Alabama and Georgia. He wishes he was on those. Imagine a five-star talent like that on Alabama's receiving core right now, where they're struggling to find consistent playmakers. He might be the guy at Alabama if he was there, but he's not getting the ball. So I mean, it's the Missouri offense is bad. They aren't going to score much on anybody this year. Especially with the way that Eli Drinkwitz is making decisions for that team.
Yeah.
Like, he is a bad coach.
But Auburn's defense is still playing good. They're keeping Auburn in the game. I know they haven't played great offenses, they're not playing, in my opinion.
Which is what I was saying before the break. The defense is having to keep Auburn in games and having to shoulder a very, very large burden.
But I don't think they're playing a good offense on Saturday in LSU.
I think they're playing the best offense they've seen since Penn State.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's not saying much, but if there's two things that give me confidence about Saturday, and again, we're going to talk about this more as the week goes on, but if there's two things that give me confidence for Auburn on Saturday, it's being at home at night in Jordan-Hare Stadium, and it's the defense that, through four games, they've done their job, in my opinion. Even against Penn State, for the most part, they did their job. Now, did they give up some plays? Yeah, absolutely. Did they give up 41? Yeah, they did. But that was late, and the second half was just a great performance by Penn State. You just got beat, right? But so far, the Auburn defense is one thing that gives me any sort of confidence for the game on Saturday, being at home and having a defense that can at least keep you in the ball game. But the problem with that is,
where are the points on offense coming
that's
from?
That's the problem, is Auburn's got to figure it out. I think there's room to figure it out. We know there's talent. We know there are playmakers on the offense. We know this. They've just got to figure out a way to make them available and make them and give them the opportunity to make plays. Guys like Tank Bigsby, guys like Jarquez Hunter, guys like the receivers on this team, guys like Camden Brown, who we heard so much about, those guys have got to play. And they've got to be Coy Moore. I mean,
against his former team.
Yeah, these guys have got to be given a chance and the opportunity to make plays. And that comes from play calling and scheme. And that's what Auburn has to do on Saturday. And that's what they got to do the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you need to see something has to change for this team on offense, whether it be personnel, game plan, something has to be different because you're not getting the job done, and I don't see signs that it's going to change enough for you to change enough between now and Saturday if you just run the same offense. I don't see where is the improvement going to come from where you're able to put up enough points to win this game.
Yeah.
And I just don't see it. I don't see it because you're playing an LSU defense that's done well stopping the run. They're giving up 111 yards rushing a game, 3.4 yards per game. That's a lot better than what you've seen out of this Missouri defense this year. It's a more athletic defense with better talent, better coaching. They're going to be ready for this offense. And you have to get creative somehow.
Yeah.
Show me something you haven't shown me so far.
Right. Well, if you're looking at just kind of comparing stats of Auburn and LSU through four games, LSU scoring 39 points a game, Auburn scoring 24. So there's that. You can look at points allowed per game. LSU is allowing 14. Auburn's allowing 22. Obviously, the outlier there is the Penn State game. Total yards for the offenses, LSU pushing 500. Auburn 377, if you want to round up. So 377 on offense for Auburn. Passing wise, LSU's throwing for almost 300 yards a game. Auburn's throwing for 200 yards a game. And rushing, LSU's rushing for 200 yards per game, and Auburn's at 174. So LSU picks up more yards. They move the ball better than Auburn does on offense. I still think the defense is going to keep Auburn in this game. But when you look at the defense's yards allowed, pass yards, like you said, LSU's only giving up 145 passing yards and only 112 or 111 rushing yards. So Auburn's going to have to figure something out. You've got to go to your bread and butter running the football. There's no doubt about it. But like I said, going into the Missouri game, I'm going to say the same thing going into the LSU game. You've got to give your playmakers the ball, but running into the backs of your offensive linemen, that's just not going to work. Not on this Auburn team, not on this Auburn offense. You've got to find ways to get them out in space, get them away from the defense, and get out in space and run. Because, again, trying to run in between your offensive linemen, that's just not going to work right now. With Auburn's situation, it's just not going to work.
Yeah, kind of how I felt going into Missouri, where I said I didn't know where the points were coming from. And you only saw points on the first two drives until the field goal in overtime, where you gained 3 yards on that drive. I definitely don't know where the points are coming from this week, and I think it's too much to ask this Auburn defense to hold a team to, like, what, 10?
Yeah, it's I don't know, man. I don't know. We're going to talk a lot more about this throughout the week, but we're going to have Trey Wallace, who covers the SEC, for OutKick when we come back.
are on the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Hope you're all doing well on this Tuesday afternoon. Well, we've got Trey Wallace, who covers the SEC for OutKick, joining us on the phone lines. Trey, happy Tuesday, man. It's good to hear from you. How you doing? Trey, do we have you now? Hit the bottom one twice, Carter. Hit it one more time. All right, Trey, do we have you now? Hey, I think I got you now.
There we go.
There we go.
I'm doing good. I hope you guys are doing well down in Auburn because, man, my prediction have almost came true this past weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the vibes over here are not great right now, and I mean, you can kind of predict what the situation is over here. But we want to get your thoughts to start out. Get your thoughts on Auburn and Missouri on Saturday. The good Tigers, if you will, they win 17-14 in overtime. What was your takeaways from this ugly game in Jordan-Hare Stadium?
Yeah, it's just, man, they can, Auburn continuing to struggle to find an offensive identity, including running the football. I think that's what kind of stands out to me the most. The quarterback situation, that just is what it is right now with Robbie Ashford, with TJ, you know, kind of still on the shelf there. I feel like Auburn is in a big rut right now. And even with the win, they're trying to figure out exactly who they are. And I think that's been very hard for Brian Harsin and this coaching staff to kind of put their finger on over the last 4 weeks. I look at the program and I wonder aloud sometimes where and how did we get to this point? And looking at it overall, Missouri was a 22-yard field goal away, dead on from, you know, potentially ending Harsin on the plains a little bit earlier than it might happen now. And I just that's kind of where I'm at with the Tigers. They just feel lost at the moment, and I don't know what this team will bring to the table on Saturday.
Yeah, Trey, I'm with you there. It's definitely. It's puzzling to see how it's gotten to this point. You talked about Auburn struggling to find an identity. Do you feel that they got any closer to that on Saturday? Because personally, I kind of feel like they're farther away.
Well, they're in a tricky spot now. I mean, they're in a spot now where you've got Robbie Ashford, and you can try to do one thing with the young man. Maybe make him a pocket passer, get him outside of it as well, try to make plays down the field. And, you know, it's just that situation where you don't know what you're watching. You don't know what they're good at. I know what they should be good at. I think Tank Bigsby, you know, should be one of the top six running backs in the conference overall right now. But the production that they're getting, you know, from the offensive line, from the running back group to the wide receivers not being able to get open on a consistent basis, you know, to your quarterback problems. They're just a list of things that are going on right now, and we're only talking about the offense. And I just feel like this group overall, you know, they need a big win, like something against LSU if they're going to, you know, get back on track. And I don't even know if that's the right word for it, to be honest with you, back on track. But, you know, right now they're hobbling, and I think that is what stands out the most about Harsin. Because, guys, to be honest with you, when Missouri was lining up to kick that field goal, I was like, okay, darn, I'm going to have to work a little harder starting Sunday and Monday because there's going to be a coaching search started by at least Monday morning.
Well, and then they were six inches away from that touchdown in overtime too.
Right. Exactly. And I've seen that play numerous times, or a guy fumbles it into the end zone and whatnot. It's ruled a touchback, game over, or you know, having to play on. The last one I remember was Tennessee, Texas A&M years ago in College Station when A&M was trying to put it away down the sideline and a Tennessee player came and punched it out. But yeah, I'm worried about Auburn right now. I'm worried about the program. I was talking with some folks yesterday The athletic department is not in a good shape. Now, let me say it this way, though. You know, your baseball program, your basketball program, your women's basketball, like, okay, that's fine. That's good. Like, you have leaders in those positions. Right now, there's just a lot of questions about football. And if we're all being honest with each other, I love Bruce Pearl. I covered that guy for 8 years. I think he's a fantastic human being. But we know what runs things, you know, in the state of Alabama, and that's football. And the problem mm-hmm. that we have right now with Auburn is that there is no identity for fans to be able to latch on to. And I hope it turns around sometime soon, but I think it's going to have to be under a new head coach.
Yeah. Trey, you talked about that Auburn offensive line and maybe the most one, they lost Tate Johnson on Saturday for 6 to 8 weeks with injury, but maybe the most indicting stat I came across after the game was Tank Bigsby had 44 yards rushing. Jarquez Hunter had 13 yards rushing. Tank had 62 yards after contact, and Jarquez had 17. What can this Auburn offensive line do going forward to allow their running backs to at least get to the line of scrimmage without getting hit in the backfield?
They've got to open up something at the tackle spot, at the right tackle spot to me. And I've watched Tank Bigsby play for a long time. It feels like, and it's just my personal opinion, he runs better off the right tackle. And, mm-hmm. and the fact that they aren't getting that, the fact that they aren't getting the push, I don't know, 5 yards down the field, that is concerning to me. And you look at Tank Bigsby's numbers this past year, and this isn't an indictment on Tank. I mm-hmm. think it's an indictment on the whole offense. You know, they have to be better. But if Auburn is going to compete in games this year, if they're going to compete Saturday night against LSU and Brian Kelly, they've got to be able to establish something. You've got to get 4 yards of carry. You've got to be able to get a push up front. You've got to be able to keep defenders, you know, when LSU brings six, you know, against Ashford, you know, having Tank right there in the play action of the drop down, you know, and being able to make those plays down the field. That's what stands out to me the most is I feel like that's what I'm missing out of Auburn is a little bit of the RPO as well. And you've got a quarterback that can do it. I'm just confused as to why we don't see it.
We're speaking with Trey Wallace, who covers the SEC for OutKick here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Trey, the line right now is LSU favored by 9 points coming to Jordan-Hare Stadium on Saturday. Before we get into the other games and the other teams around the Southeastern Conference, what are the chances that you're giving Auburn to pull out this what is now an upset over LSU?
Look, I think if they – if they can establish a running game, when I say establish a running game, I'm talking put a 130 up in the box score, you know, 130 yards, something like that. Take some pressure off Robbie Ashford or whoever plays quarterback on Saturday against LSU. Like, that's the first thing. But, I have been to a lot of LSU-Auburn games. I've covered a lot of them. I've been to a lot of them growing up in Mobile and making trips to Baton Rouge or Auburn for this game. This is one of those games where you kind of just throw the record books out, throw the spread away, get on the field. It's going to be dirty. It's going to be real nasty in the trenches. Somebody's going to make a play or two that's going to shock folks. You know, I think Auburn hangs in there with LSU. I do, because I think LSU is also a team, though they are young, And I think that they're a little bit, even though they're young at certain spots, they're a little bit more experienced along the defensive line, LSU is. But I think this game can be close. I think it will be close. I think LSU wins by a field goal. I think Auburn is going to hang in there. I think the crowd will be fun for a Saturday night. At least it'll be hype because it's LSU. Like, that's the biggest thing. You know, if they were playing Missouri again or something along those lines, okay, that's a different story. But a night game, you know, on the plains, it should be a good atmosphere. And I think, you know, Auburn will come out and be ready to play. The biggest thing to me, and I'll end it with this one, is what do we get out of the quarterbacks and how are Brian Harsin and them going to manage both?
And Trey, looking around the Southeastern Conference at some of the other games that are happening on Saturday, you have number 7 Kentucky visiting number 14 Ole Miss. You have number 2 Alabama on the road at number 20 Arkansas. Texas A&M visiting Mississippi State. What do you expect to see out of these games and matchups over the weekend?
For Kentucky, Chris Rodriguez is back. One of the top running backs in the Southeastern Conference returns, and it's, you know, politely sitting there, first game back is against Ole Miss on the road. Like, it just, it lines up really well for Kentucky to go to Oxford and get a win. It's hard to stop the double whammy of Will Levis and now Chris Rodriguez. I don't trust Ole Miss's defense at the moment. Offensively, you know, there are reports out of Oxford that Zach Evans suffered a hip pointer last week. So how is he going to play on Saturday? I like Kentucky in that matchup. In Fayetteville, even though they dropped the game last week to A&M, I still think KJ Jefferson and Rock Sanders can do enough to hang close with Alabama until the fourth quarter. Then I think the tide, you know, breaks away somewhere, you know, around that 14-point mark, I think, at the end. But I think it's a good game for at least, you know, 3.5 quarters. And then taking, you know, Texas A&M, Mississippi State, like, that's the one that stands out to me. It's like, okay, if Will Rogers can go out there and sling the ball, he passed for, if I'm not mistaken, he had like 54 pass attempts last week, 6 touchdowns. I know it was against Bowling Green. But what I'm getting at is if he can get past the A&M secondary, who has struggled at times this year, you know, I think Mississippi State could beat A&M. I don't like Texas A&M right now. I know that they beat Arkansas, but they beat them with a 99-yard fumble recovery for a touchdown, and then they got them at the end because Arkansas hit the top of the upright.
Yeah,
you know, I just don't trust Texas A&M. There, nothing screams consistency with Jimbo Fisher's offense. Nothing.
And then Trey, they basically have had a 2-man offense to this point in the year, and Ania Smith's out for the year now.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, Devin Aston, I mean, okay, is he going to be able to do it all by himself? I mean, I know he had, what, I think it was 155, 160 against Arkansas, but, you know, Mississippi State's going to give up some yards, but can Texas A&M's offense, passing-wise, keep up with what Mississippi State's going to do? Because Mississippi State's going to score. I think this is going to be a different game, a different Mississippi State offense than what you saw in Baton Rouge against LSU. Only because Texas A&M struggles in the secondary. So that one stands out to me. I think Mike Leach gets a win on Saturday. I'm calling for that game. And again, Kentucky beats Ole Miss. Alabama beats Arkansas. Georgia will absolutely destroy Missouri. And just, man, I feel really bad for Eli Drinkwitz because coming off that near win at Auburn, he now has to face Stetson Bennett and the Bulldogs. So that one should be over by at least halftime Saturday night.
Trey, I have to agree with you on the Georgia-Missouri game. That it's going to be ugly. But Trey Wallace, who covers the SEC for OutKick here on the Line. Trey, we appreciate you coming on and giving us some SEC talk, man. Let everybody know where they can keep up with you and everything you're doing.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me on every week. You can follow me at Trey Wallace _ on Twitter. Follow all my work at outkick.com. Lots of great content coming this week. It should be fun. I'm changing things up. I'm going to be at Auburn LSU, and then I'm heading to Talladega on Sunday for a little NASCAR coverage.
All right.
I'm going to go down there and I'm going to cover NASCAR, but I'm also going to support my cousin Bubba, who's running that 45 car. So it should be a fun weekend.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah.
Trey, so are you saying that what is your prediction for Auburn LSU Saturday, and then is your prediction Bubba on Sunday?
Oh man. So I'm gonna go LSU by a field goal. Okay. And remind you guys, I got a lot of hate on the air last week by picking Missouri by a field goal when it should have happened.
I agreed.
So, I think LSU wins by a field goal, but this is a fun game for 4 quarters. And then Saturday, look, it's Dega. Anything can happen at Dega. Bubba is the defending champion from last year. But we'll see what happens. Yeah, that's why I love the craziness of Talladega. We're going to see multiple crazy wrecks, and hopefully nobody gets hurt. But at the end, I'll sure be hoping that number 45 car is the one in victory lane.
Love it.
Well, hey, man, have a great time in Auburn. Have a great time at Talladega. We'll talk to you next week, all right?
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Trey Wallace, who covers the SEC for OutKick. Sounds like he's dipping his toes into some NASCAR coverage as well. It's probably the first time NASCAR's ever been mentioned on this program, but that's okay. It's pretty cool. I watch it every now and then. Not very often, though.
I have become more of a Formula One person here.
That's caught a lot of steam and a lot of traction as Formula One.
It's so fascinating.
I think it's because of that Formula One show that was on Netflix.
I mean, I never had paid attention to it until I watched the show, and now I'm all the way in on it.
Yeah, well, again, Trey Wallace, who covers the SEC for OutKick, he'll be in Auburn Saturday, heading to Dega on Sunday. I honestly didn't even know it was this weekend, if I'm just being completely honest. So, good for him, man. That'll be fun. We enjoy having Trey Wallace here on the program. He always gives good stuff. Talking about Auburn LSU, recapping Auburn Missouri, previewing Auburn LSU and some other games from around the SEC. Let's take our final break. We'll come back and wrap up the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up the Tuesday edition of On the Line, Jacob Goins, Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Big thank you to Trey Wallace hopping on, who covers the SEC for OutKick. We always appreciate him coming on. He's got great stuff and always a great conversation with him. But if you missed any of that conversation or any of today's show, be sure to go and find the podcast. Just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. You can find it there or at ESPNAU.com under the podcast center. Well, while we were talking to Trey, Bruce Pearl gave some news about Auburn basketball. Carter, what was the news that you saw?
I believe I saw that Alan Flanagan, Bruce said that Alan Flanagan is out for an indefinite amount of time with family and personal reasons, which is so unfortunate because it felt like this offseason Alan Flanagan had gotten all the way back on track, and just to have another kind of roadblock in the way, I hate it for him, and I hope we see him back in an Auburn uniform this winter for the Auburn basketball team as they get rolling.
Did he allude to anything of what it was, or just said family personal reasons?
Everything I saw was just family personal reasons.
Okay.
I mean, I can keep looking at it.
I mean, he also probably didn't give a whole lot about it.
AU Campus Safety. The National Weather Service in Birmingham forecasts low impacts to the area from Hurricane Ian from Friday morning to Saturday evening. Wind gusts of up to 30 miles per hour and heavy rain possible.
Great. Love that. Love that when high school football and college football are going on in town. Love that for us. But look, in all seriousness, though, about a hurricane, hopefully it doesn't hit as hard as they think it does, and hopefully people stay safe and everything like that. But, yeah, sounds like we're going to have some weather rolling through the Auburn-Opelika area Friday and Saturday. But hate to hear that about Alan Flanagan. Hopefully he's not out super, super long. Maybe it's just a week or two or something here during the offseason as practice gets ramped up. But you're right. It seemed like Alan Flanagan was starting. Maybe this was the year for him to finally bounce back from that injury, because he just wasn't the same afterwards. And look, he was a solid player before the injury. I'm not going to be one of those people that said he was just a superstar before it. I think he was good. I think
he was the best player on that team.
Well, that's not saying
2 years
much.
Ago.
It's not saying much.
I mean, he was better than Sharif. He was.
Yeah,
he was the scoring option.
Yeah.
And he would go get his, and he would look good doing it.
And so again,
and you were forcing him to play out of mm-hmm. position, and then he comes back last year, not 100%, into a team that was pretty set when he came back, and I don't think, I just don't ever felt like he settled in, he was comfortable, and he found his role. This offseason, I think you've started to see him get back to who he was, and I think he has found that role, and you just hope that he's back quickly and that everything is all right with this family matter.
That's what's important, and that's what sticks out to me, is he found his new role, because when he was playing before, He was the guy on that team. He was the guy, the scorer, the man, the dude, right? And then he got injured, and then he came back.
And he's supposed to be like the fifth or sixth option.
Right, and that's a tough adjustment. It just is. And so it took him a while, but I think this season was going to be the year he figured it out. Not saying that he's out. We don't know. We're just now hearing the news from Bruce Pearl saying that he's out indefinitely, which could be 3 or 4 days, could be 3 to 4 months. You just really don't know what that's going to be. But hopefully everything is okay and gets situated with the Flanagan family and that Allen can come back and be a part of this team, because Auburn basketball has got some talent, man. You want to talk about a team in college basketball that's got some stupid talent, it's Auburn, and they're going to be really, really good this year.
I think they're going to exceed expectations this year.
I think they're going to be a better team than they were last year. I just think that's going to happen. So again, hopefully everything's okay with the Flanagan family and that Allen can come back and rejoin Auburn basketball as soon as possible. That's it for the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Come back tomorrow, 2 to 4 here on ESPN 106.7. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.